I've mentioned before that my daughter has a little audiobook player called a Yoto.
Yes.
So some listeners will probably have these. There's also another box on the market called a Tony, which is basically the same thing. They both work in a similar way. What you get is you get some things which are essentially NFC tags, and you introduce them to the player and they read an ID and play an audiobook, and then you take them away and the book stops, and they have a few other basic playback controls, but that means that you can easily swap between audiobooks and buy new ones and so on. And these are good, but the way that they work is these NFC tags essentially contain a URL that points to a server run by the company who make the audiobook players. And then it downloads from there to the player and plays locally, which is fine as long as that company continues to exist.
Mm-hmm. So have you hacked it then?
Not quite.
Oh.
But what I've been thinking ever since we got this was, wouldn't it be great if you could play files off your own server? But until now, I didn't have such a server that I might be able to play audiobooks from. In a previous episode, I mentioned I'm now running Audio Bookshelf, which is where I listen to audiobooks for me. But I thought, I wonder if I could make something that would work like a Yoto, but play audiobooks off of my Audio Bookshelf server.
But it has to have the family approval factor of being in a nice plastic box with a friendly display and a QR code that's printed and durable, right?
Right, so this is a long-term project.
You need seed investment for this, do you?
But what I wanted to work out first, for the purposes of this show, was whether it was going to be possible for me to make something basically along the similar concept, where you have some sort of hardware token, you can have your computer read that token and talk to Audio Bookshelf to find and play an audiobook just based on what's on that token, and then have some sort of playback controls as well.
That feels like it wouldn't be that hard to do.
Well, funnily enough, it wasn't.
What about the hardware token?
Right, so we'll come to that. So to start with, I needed to work out if Audio Bookshelf could do this, if you can give Audio Bookshelf a URL and it'll say, or an ID, and it'll say, yes, here's the file to play, which it can. It has quite an extensive API in terms of being able to browse libraries and look at the items in your library and see what the files are. Like, you might have multiple files, or you might have a single file that's got chapter markers in and so on. And it will give you all of that as JSON quite easily. Each account on your server can generate an API key, and then you just need to either send that in a header or tack it onto the end of a URL.
So first step is to get your child to know how to get an API key, right?
This is another part of the ecosystem, which I'll come to at a later date.
It's an ecosystem now, is it? Okay.
Well, even with the Yoto box, you've got to have an app which gets it logged on to the Wi-Fi and has all the controls set up and has an account with them. So, you know, there does need to be some degree of adult setup in the first place for all of this to be possible. But if you can get the API key and the ID of the book that you want, it is possible to programmatically ask Audio Bookshelf for the file to play. So I started writing some code to see how I might go about this. And I started writing it in Python because I'm quite comfortable writing with Python. And I just wanted to get the basics of, if I've got this URL somewhere, how can I make the requests and how can I get something to play it in a script and how can I have some controls for the playback? It turns out that once you've got a URL, it's actually really easy to just play it by using libvlc, which has bindings for Python. So it's literally just VLC play this URL with the token on and it plays, which is quite good.
And that means you don't have to worry about whatever the format of the files is. That's abstracted away into the lovely cone-headed people from France, right?
Quite so.
So you've prototyped this using Python and VLC, not the device itself.
Yes. So at the moment, I'm just writing the software, which I can then deploy. So whatever the device is going to be running the software. So I'm starting by writing the software that does it, and then I'll work out. But another part of that is, when it comes to deploying code to a device, I don't really want to be faffing around with Python, because my experience of trying to get the Python project that I've written to then run somewhere else exactly the same never seems to go to plan. So for that and for another reason, I actually wanted to write this in Go, which is what I ended up doing. Once I had the basic framework of the application done, I rewrote it in Go. So two reasons for that are: very easy to deploy because you can spit out a binary for multiple architectures. So if I wanted to run this on an AMD 64 box, I could, but also if I wanted to run it on an ARM box, I could. But the other thing is, I worked out this is going to need to be doing two things at least in parallel. It needs to be watching for the hardware token and reading it and seeing if it disappears again. But at the same time, once it's read that and started playing and playback is going, it then needs to watch for the user to input commands to say skip chapter, turn volume up and down or whatever. And I'm sure doing that in Python is possible, but the stuff I found for concurrency in Python isn't designed for that sort of thing. It's designed for doing stuff where you're going to have different threads listening for different things and they're going to be idle at different times. And then when one thing's idle, you want the other thing to be going. Whereas what I want is things going all the time. And Go is very good at that using its Go routines feature.
Isn't the media playback controls, is that what you're talking about, listening for?
Yes.
Isn't that outsourced to VLC now that you've launched VLC with the audio?
You haven't launched VLC. You are using libvlc to provide a player. And so then that provides the API for saying skip chapter, skip back.
Got it.
But you've still got to
listen out.
You've
for
got
those.
To listen for input.
Right.
Yes.
Got it.
So this is where I've got to so far. And coming back to the hardware token, the way I've done it for the prototype is you put a file on a USB drive, you plug the USB drive in, the program is watching for something to appear there. And when it does, it reads it, sees if it contains a URL for audio bookshelf, and then plays it. And then while that's going on, it's listening for key presses for, well, at the moment it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 until I actually work out what the controls are going to be, which then lets you control playback. And if you take the USB stick out again while it's playing, it neatly stops and throws away the audio player.
I'm really looking forward to seeing how this project develops, because it sounds like you've proven the basic concepts. I'm most interested to hear what you call your creation when it's fully formed.
Yes.
And I'll extend an offer. I have lots of Raspberry Pi stuff, which is unused. So if in this process you find yourself needing any SBCs, let me know. I can send you some kit.
That would be very helpful. There's all sorts of ways I can go for this. So it's kind of hard to sort of focus on doing one thing at a time. Because, I've been thinking and looking at the various hardware options. I'm thinking I might want to stick with USB sticks because they're quite easy to get and you can easily embed them in something good, cool looking, for example. I could 3D print various things that have a USB port sticking out of them. There's the fact that I might want the device to have some sort of display. I might want to use NFC cards or tokens or something, and then I need something to read them that works and I can interface with it easily. And then there's this question of, well, how do you then get the tokens and write them to these hardware devices? Am I going to have to also have some sort of mobile app which interfaces with them? And yes, so there's lots of things to think about, but this is definitely part one of many that I hope you'll be hearing about this project.
Sounds like an excellent maker project.
Is the Raspberry Pi about the minimum hardware you're thinking of going to, or do you reckon you could go lower, like a ESP32 or something like that?
I really don't know. When it comes to that sort of thing, I have no idea what the capabilities are. I mean, I need something which can connect to a network, have some sort of hardware interface with a few buttons and whatever I'm reading these things with. And it has to be able to have speakers plugged in and powered and playing. That's the bit that I'm really finding tricky at the moment, is where do I go with something like that if I'm not going to be soldering these all up by hand, which I really don't want to do. I'm hoping for something a bit more off the shelf, but we'll have to see what's possible.
I've got an old Mycroft Model 1 in my loft. If you want to put it in that and have this scary Mycroft reading audiobooks to your child.
What were those O2 things? Because I've got one of those.
A juggler. Yeah, I might still have one of those in the loft. The trouble is they don't have enough USB ports. Because you need one USB port to run the OS, and then there's another USB port inside which is taken up with the Wi-Fi dongle, and then you're out.
Right.
But yes, I'd had that thought too, because it's even got a touchscreen. So
yeah.
But yes, this will develop, and hopefully you'll hear more about it. Maybe I'll even have one at the next log camp.
Ooh, how exciting.
Welcome to the continuing adventures of Alan and his search for note-taking Nirvana.
Oh, no.
So you may recall, in the previous episode of this, I was using Kodi MD. Now, I'm still using Kodi MD. I have lots of documents in Kodi MD, and I'm quite happy with it as it goes. Then someone at work DM'd me and said, how much feedback have you had telling you not to use Kodi MD? And I said, wait, what? Why? And they said, yeah, it's abandoned. You should probably use the replacement, HedgeDoc, or whatever the other thing is. And then they linked me to a like historical timeline that's on the webpage for this application. And there's a definite dead end where Kodi MD is. And I knew there wasn't a lot of development going on, but that's because I thought it was finished, right? But no, there is another line that continues long past Kodi MD to another project. So it looks like I'm going to have to spin up a container or install whatever this other thing is. I think it's HedgeDoc. I think there was some drama in the past. We don't need to go there. So I'm going to have to do that and then migrate all my notes across from Kodi MD into HedgeDoc or whatever it is, which is fine. In the meantime, I saw a link go by on the old internet tubes, and it was a link to a French project by a group who call themselves, let me get this right in my proper French, La Suite Numérique, which is a open source group who create a number of web-based applications. And one of them is a docs site, as in multiplayer, multi-editing, Google Docs type of thing. But actually, it's more like a Notion kind of a thing.
Oh.
Yeah. You may have seen some people discussing it online this week, because it did actually get a little bit of, you know, hotness from people all over the place saying that it was an interesting project. And part of the reason why it's interesting is it's government-funded in the EU, government organizations who want to use open-source software, and this collaborative note-taking tool is one of the outputs of that project. There are other projects they've got as well. Now, I took a look at it, and I span up a Docker container. There's instructions in the README. It's pretty straightforward. There's not a lot you have to do, but it makes some assumptions about the environment that weren't the same as the setup that I had.
Does it assume you speak French?
Well, there's a lot of French, yes, but that's fine, because there's also English, German, and Dutch, I think, are the four languages I've seen in the user interface. I did manage to get it spun up on my laptop, actually, on my work laptop, and go to localhost, and sure enough, you're presented with a user interface that's quite familiar. You can type Markdown directly in using all the normal key presses you would use, like backticks and hashes, and you can do code blocks and all the stuff you'd expect to in Markdown. But there's this command key, you press slash, and then that brings up a little menu. And it's quite pretty. It's React, and it's adaptive, so that if you shrink the window, it goes to a narrow, like mobile phone style of user interface. It's quite pretty, quite nice. However, when I was running it, I noticed that there were some things that I couldn't do that I know that I would really want, like being able to just paste in and copy out Markdown. And there are some limitations in how you copy information in and out at the moment. And there are open bugs. It's an open source project, so people can get involved. But it's not quite there yet enough for me. So really, I'm not saying I'm switching to this thing. I'm saying I'm keeping an eye on this thing because it does look interesting. And I'll put a link in the show notes. You might want to have a play with it. You might want to get involved in development. It's a bit of Django. There's some React in there. It's all open source and it's quite cool and quite straightforward to get up and running.
Yeah, one of the things that got my attention about this is it's, as well as Notion, it describes itself as an alternative to Outline, which is what we have recently started using at work for our documentation.
Ah,
I don't know what Outline is.
No, me either.
Well, it's a documentation tool. It's like a tool for having a suite of documentation written in Markdown. So you have a web interface, you have an index down the side, like a tree structure, and you can put sort of wiki-like documents in and edit them collaboratively. And it sort of renders it. It doesn't have like a separate editing and viewing view. It just, you edit in Markdown sort of within the page, and it all looks very nice. And it's quite slick, like a lot slicker than the previous wikis and ways of doing things we had before. Because we had, I think we might have had a media wiki before, and we had GitLab wikis, which are all a bit fine for the people who are the programmers amongst us, but we're, you know, a multidisciplinary company, and Outline is much more friendly to people who don't really care what Markdown is and want to document a process really well, for example.
Yeah, so I'm going to keep an eye on this thing. I might update the repo locally and spin it up now and then and keep an eye on the issues that I care about. But I don't think I'm going to switch to this as my doc. I'm still going to have a go at installing HedgeDoc and migrate all my stuff from KodyMD.
What are you using for note-taking, Mark?
I'm still on Joplin.
Yes, and I'm on Joplin following your advice. Give him time. Give him time.
I refuse. I will not do it.
I have upgraded our home network to multi-gigabit Ethernet. I think I get away with saying Ethernet.
Is this why you're never in the office anymore? Because all your fast internets are at home.
There is a little bit of that going on, yes. It's difficult to drag yourself away. So my office is upstairs in the farthest point from where the internet ISP router is in the downstairs of the house. And we don't have Ethernet running through the walls of the house like Mark has. So I rely exclusively on Wi-Fi to get internet access from my office to the router downstairs and then out to the internet. And we have a 1 gig fiber plan with Virgin. But up here on the internet, on a good day with the following wind, I get about 200 megabits. And this has been making me sad for some time. And I did actually consider having a Cat7 cable run around the outside of the house and all of that jazz and up here and drill through the wall to bring an Ethernet cable up to the office so that I had a wired connection down to the router in the front room.
You're not going to just like dangle a cable out the window or throw one down the stairs and have it go, like, you know, nail it to the wall.
Like the good old days.
Yeah.
That good old days cable still exists. I still have it. That was the one I used to throw out of the window next to me here onto the patio and then go and sit in the shade that was cast by our neighbour's trees at the bottom of the garden. And on a hot day, go and sit in the shade with my laptop with this 30-metre Ethernet cable. Yeah, pre-Wi-Fi. So I'd considered the round the house, and I'm not going to be getting up and down ladders these days. I refuse to do it. So it was going to cost a few hundred pounds to have somebody come and like drill holes in bits of the house. And also I didn't want to risk puncturing plumbing, you know, tubes, what are my tubes? Plumbing pipes in the walls of the house.
No, it's the internet that's in tubes. Yes, it's the internet that's in tubes.
Tubes, pipes, it's all the same.
It's Ethernet for water.
Because I have a track record of picking up drills and drilling directly into water mains. But because that was going to cost a bit, it kind of put me off. And it was a faff to organise. So time passes and Wi-Fi 7, the standards are being ratified. And I thought, well, that sounds like it could be the thing, because there's all of this talk about these astonishing speeds that Wi-Fi 7 is capable of. And I think that they must have got the certifications in place, the radio certifications in place in parts of the world before the UK, because I started seeing reviews for some of this equipment. And sure enough, the speeds looked astonishing. And late last year, late 2024, I think all of this got ratified and agreed over here. So following Christmas, I bought a pair of Wi-Fi 7 mesh devices. And I'm here to tell you the hype is real.
Are these TP-Link Deco things? I've talked about them. I've got Decos in my house, but they're clearly like much more aged and rubbish than the ones, the modern, like new standard ones you have. Are they? Do you know if they're backward compatible? Could I get like one of those and still use the others at a lower speed or something? Or does it not work like that?
I think they are, from the mesh point of view. If it's part of the Deco range, I think they all share the same mesh technology. What, of course, differs is the speed that each of the nodes can provide to its downstream clients.
Right.
But yes, I have got TP-Link. I have a pair of TP-Link Deco BE85s, which I think in other parts of the world are the BE19000 or something. And I'll warn you now, they are expensive, and I would recommend that TP-Link have a refurbish program. So in January, I found that they had six of these on offer through their refurb program at a 40% discount, which was enough of a discount for me to decide I'm going to try this Wi-Fi 7 out because it's going to work out the same cost of having wired cables put in.
Sorry, you said you got six discounted. I'm looking at the Amazon link and it's £730 for two of them.
Yes. So I got a pair discounted by 40%.
Got it. I thought you meant you bought all six with a discount of 40%. I thought,
no.
Good Lord.
No, I bought a single pair at a 40% discount.
And is a pair sufficient for covering your house?
Yes, it is. And I really wondered whether that was going to be the case or not. And yes, it definitely is. And I think it would cover a larger space. Their marketing certainly suggests it would cover a larger house than ours.
Right. And so is one wired in to your router and then the other one does mesh networking with that one to give you better coverage elsewhere?
Yeah. So I have a box of tricks provided by Virgin, which is the internet, and the Deco is plugged into that. And so the Deco gets its upstream connection to the internet from the fiber box. And then the Deco, there's one in the front room, which is where the internet router is. And then the other Deco is here in the office next to me. And they automagically talk to one another when you turn them on and establish a backhaul connection. And I think these ones I've got are either tri-band or quad-band. And what that means is they have a dedicated wireless backhaul frequency just for communicating with one another that is separate from handling all of the rest of the devices. And this is where they get seriously good. Because over that wireless backhaul, so I need to explain, my workstation up here is now connected via Ethernet to an Ethernet switch. I'll talk about the Ethernet switch in a moment because that was a bargain. And that Ethernet switch, it also has a connection to the Deco up here. So my workstation is wired to the switch and then connected to the Deco, and the Deco provides wireless backhaul downstairs. And I put a small box downstairs, an old NUC, and I ran iPerf 3 from up here to down there. And it pushes a touch over 3.2 gigabits over that wireless backhaul.
Okay.
And yes, I was very, very happy with that. I was more happy with the fact that I get the full beans 1 gigabit internet up here now over that wireless backhaul as well. So I was absolutely delighted that it worked as well as it did, because I couldn't believe it was going to be this good. Like, I'd watched the reviews and everyone's hyping it up. And I was like, I don't know what their test conditions are. For all I know, these things are 3 feet apart. Well, in my case, these are on opposite sides of a four-bedroom house. You know, there is some distance between these two nodes.
And solid walls.
Not too many. It's internal walls are mostly drywall, so it's only the external walls that are proper bricks. So it's mostly wood and drywall in between, but nevertheless, quite a lot of house. So I was super impressed with this. And the find that I made was I thought I wanted to get the home server on to the switch to serve the home over this wireless network. So I found a cheap, in air quotes, cheap. It's a no brand 2.5 gigabit 9-port managed switch, and it's made by a company called Yaunli, and it's the Yaunli 9-port. And I'll have a link to their website in the show notes. And when I bought mine, which I got from Amazon, there was a 15% discount at the time, and then a 10% voucher code, which meant that this thing cost me £63 for a managed switch, which has got 8 2.5 gigabit ports and one 10 gigabit SFP port. So I've connected the switch up here in the office to the deco over a 10 gigabit SFP port because I've got nothing else to plug it into. And I know that now that wireless backhaul is capable of multi-gigabit transfer, so I might as well give it all the beans it can have and make the most of it.
Have you written to Virgin Media disgusted that they don't offer 10 gigabit to the home yet?
No, I haven't. But what I have looked at, I did look, what I have looked at is they're soon going to be rolling out 2 gigabit
of course you are.
Fiber yes. internet. Yes. And so I now have equipment that can actually take advantage of that. And what I learned in this whole process is that our old router wasn't providing a 1 gigabit service to anyone. Even if you were right next to the thing, it could only actually push through about 600 megabits at max anyway.
So what are you using all this newfound bandwidth for?
I decline to answer.
It's when he keeps on reprovisioning his Nix OS boxes. That's what it is.
Well, there is a bit of that. Like, it is accessing large amounts of software. So, for example, I talked a little while ago about ACT and running using Docker to run GitHub Actions. Well, you know, running containers, you're always pulling down new container images and things that used to take a measurable amount of time, as in it's time to make a cup of tea amount of time, literally take seconds now. It's astonishing the jump from what 200 megabits is to a gigabit in terms of the time that comes down. And also, it's absolutely lol-worthy how quickly games come down from Steam now.
Now you're talking my language.
you click on that 22 gigabyte download for Cyberpunk and it takes a couple of minutes. It's astonishing. It's just astonishing. So my recommendation is everyone should spend some time looking into Wi-Fi 7, particularly using it as a backhaul where you would traditionally have to have cables if you want to get decent bandwidth between two points. And this little Yanli router, for the money, I think it's a little wonder box. It's absolutely brilliant.